Was Jan Arden doing a classic Stand By Me. Now, we're going to go into our news section of the hour, and you're listening to Native Solidarity News. So, JJ, what do you got for us?
Well, I think this evening we have Dan up first with some updates from Tiendanega and Grassy Narrows. Is that correct, Dan?
That is correct, JJ. So the first piece comes from the Toronto Star. That features an interview with Sean Brent from the Tiendanega Mohawk Territory in eastern Ontario. And the Kanikahai there are bracing for a combined Canadian Forces and RCMP operation targeting the cigarette trade next month. Sean Brent is quoted in the article as saying, "The whole community thinks it is the gospel, and people are gearing up for it as if it was a fact." Sean said that news of the planned operation leaked out from military sources, but, you know, for security reasons, didn't elaborate. Among those attending a public meeting in Tiendanega this week that dealt with fears that they're surrounding the impending military and RCMP invasion, one community member there was Brant Barty, age 43, a coordinator of the Aboriginal Media course at the First Nations Technical Institute at Tiendanega. The meeting heard the operation would target businesses that sell cigarettes and tobacco products without paying sales tax. Barty, a lifelong Tiendanega resident, said the community was already upset about low-flying military helicopters from nearby Canadian Forces base Trenton flew over residences and businesses the night of February 8th and during the next day. "The military just come in here when they want," Barty said. "There's a growing animosity here. The attitude of the military has got to change." Chief R. Donald Merrickle of the Mohawks of the Bay of Quint, which includes the Tiendanega Reserve, wrote a letter to the military on February 9th protesting the helicopter flights, saying, "Further activities will be viewed as harassment and a serious breach of protocol." Merrickle continued, "We have a lot of people in our community who are decorated veterans." Barty says that he fears any operation on the reserve would end tragically, like when the Ontario Provincial Police invaded Iprawash Provincial Park late at night, September 6th, 1995. During the Sundance ceremony, and assassinated Dudley George. And the next piece comes from the Canadian Press. The Grassy Narrows First Nations is demanding that forestry companies Weyerhaeuser Company Limited and Abbott be consolidated and incorporated, stop logging on its territory, or face a fierce campaign of international protest. In a letter to the companies, advocates for the reserve say decades of unsustainable logging have poisoned waters with mercury and other toxins, interfered with economic opportunities, and nearly eliminated the ability to practice an Aboriginal way of life. The people of Grassy Narrows say the letter follows failed negotiations, lawsuits, environmental assessment requests, public protests, and a three-year-long logging blockade. They cite a report by the Canadian Parks and Wilderness Society, which says that Abitibi has clear-cut huge tracts of their land, sprayed the land with pesticides, and replanted it in a way that serves only their own economic interests. They say plans filed with the Ontario government indicate that Abitibi Consolidated and Weyerhaeuser will continue their existing operations through 2009, with a requested extension through 2024. The Anishinaabe of Grassy Narrows First Nation have lived on land north of Kenora, Ontario, for thousands of years. Nearly half of the community's members still get their sustenance from the land by hunting, trapping, and gathering medicine and berries. Roberta Kisik, a Grassy Narrows grandmother and trapper, said in a release, The clear-cutting of the land and the destruction of the forest is an attack on our people. She continued, the land is the basis of who we are. Our culture is a land-based culture, and the destruction of the land is the destruction of our culture. Joseph Forbister, a Grassy Narrows business owner and community leader, said his people have been taken advantage of. We have participated fully in planning for many years, and our concerns are never properly considered. He continued, we are never treated as equal partners in the process. What's worse, our attendance at the information sessions and open house is misconstrued as participation or approval, a tactic that is seen regularly in so-called consultation processes, where people who attend the processes are signed off as having agreed to these proposals. Weyerhaeuser and Abitibi both have their headquarters in Montreal. So if people are ever free during the day, you should be you're encouraged to visit them and ask about these policies and question why they don't feel it's necessary to consult the people who live on the land about policies that affect their very lives, because people in Grassy Narrows are dying from mercury poisoning, and again, their way of life is under complete attack. And I believe Erkar has the next piece.
Yeah, the story I have is it just happened about a week and a half ago. Dudley George's killer cop was killed in a car crash. A public inquiry scrutinizing the death of Dudley George has lost a central witness to the decade-old tragedy following the death of former police officer who fatally shot the native protester. Kenneth Dean, who was to testify within weeks at a judicial probe into George's death when he was killed Saturday in a car crash in eastern Ontario. A tragic event, the George family said, because it's going to leave some key questions unanswered. We had known from the criminal trial that Dean was the one who pulled the trigger that killed my brother, said Sam George. George was fatally shot September 6, 1995, when provincial police officers clad in riot gear advanced on a group of natives who had seized control of the Upper Wash Provincial Park. The group was convinced that it was the site of an ancient Aboriginal burial ground, claims verified the following week. 2 years later, Dean was convicted of criminal negligence causing death and handed a 2-year community sentence. On Saturday, the former provincial police sniper was driving in whiteout conditions along 401 near Prescott, Ontario, when his Ford Explorer was struck from behind by a tractor trailer. Police said Dean, 45, who was pronounced dead at the scene, while his male passenger remained in hospital yesterday in stable condition. Dean is the third provincial police officer involved in the Upper Wash crisis to die before testifying before the inquiry. Sergeant Margaret Eve was hit by a transport truck on Highway 401 near Chatham, Ontario, in June 2000, while Inspector Dale Linton, the officer who activated Dean's unit that night, was killed in a single vehicle accident near Smith Falls, Ontario, in October 2000. While Dean's testimony was no longer critical in the since his role has been dealt with by the courts, we would have asked some tough questions, said George, a family lawyer. Murray Klippenstein said. Now, the sad thing about this whole thing is that Dean was given a 2-year community sentence, and the whole thing about this story that bothers me the most is he's a sniper. What is a sniper needed in a situation like that? It's like, you bring in snipers, you're already asking for trouble. You know, it's like, what's the point of a sniper? You know, if you want to handle the situation, and as far as I know, to a lot of people's knowledge, the natives who, as they say, seized control of the Upper Wash National Park, weren't armed. Now, in a lot of police organizations in this country, it is illegal to pull a weapon unless you see a weapon. Now, of course, police are going to say that they saw a weapon, that I'm pretty sure he was going for a weapon, that's why I killed him. And I just, it's nice to see how whenever there's justice in this country, I find that it has to do with either your class, your gender, or your race. Like, I don't like playing down any crimes against Canadians, but I find that it's like whenever something happens to a white person in this country, if they're a nice, rich businessman and they get mugged, the police are on it almost immediately. Like, take that the situation that happened in Toronto on the Boxing Day shooting, where that young white girl was killed by a gang member. The police were on that in minutes. Now, I understand it was a serious situation. It's like, I'm not playing that down. It's like, that was a tragedy in itself. That should never have happened. But George, it's been 10 years since George was murdered. Not, you know, accidentally shot. No, he was killed by a sniper. Killed by a sniper because some guy decided, because Mike Harris, former Premier of Ontario, decided to send in the OPP. Now, naturally, Harris is saying, no, I didn't do any of this. Come on, it's like there is evidence to the contrary. Now, when is it that there's going to be equality within the police system? When are Mohawks, natives from all over the country, African Americans, Indians, Muslims, when are we, people of color, going to get some rights here? When is it that when a police officer wantingly murders someone because they're protesting their own rights, when is justice going to happen? When are the police going to say, okay, you know, whoa, we need to take a look at ourselves here, and we need to throw the book at this? You know, I'm hearing too many times stuff like this happening and nothing gets done. It takes an inquiry a decade later for any real answers to come out. Like, come on. You know, it's like, that's ridiculous. You know, when the FLQ went all terroristic back in the 60s, you know, the army was in there within days. You know, okay, when is this going to stop? You know, it's like, when are we going to get our due here? When are the police in this country going to be held accountable? That's what I'd like to know. But, you know, that's enough of my rant. You know,
I think it's a very good question.
It's a perfect question. You know, it's like we've got RCMP officers who took Stonechild out into the middle of nowhere and let him freeze to death. You know, it's like things like that can't happen anymore. This country is supposedly built on a moral standing of, like, openness. Well, it's time for us to be open, and it's time for us to take the bad apples off the tree and toss them in a prison cell, because this is crap. This is absolute crap. You want equality. You want to talk about equality? Actions speak louder than words in this case. Anyways, JJ, what do you got?
Well, actually, Erica, I have a related story in terms of police addressing violence against women, Aboriginal women, non-Aboriginal women, in British Columbia. In British Columbia, authorities have launched a larger investigation into the growing number of missing and murdered women along the infamous Highway of Tears, which is a 720-kilometer stretch of road between Prince George and Prince Rupert. According to British Columbia's Solicitor General, John Less, over 35 RCMP officers are working as part of a dedicated investigative team assigned to the disappearance and murders of a number of young women on Highway 16 in northern BC. 22 senior crime investigators were recently assigned to assist in the case of a 14-year-old Aliyah Sarik Agar after her body was found outside Prince George early in February. A further 15 officers are working on other investigations into the disappearances of eight or deaths of eight other women. dating back to 1990. So, Urquhart, when you're talking about it taking a long time for people to address issues like this, women have been disappearing since 1990 along this route. Missing or found dead along the highway since 1990 are Sarek Agur, age 14, Tamara Chipman, age 22, Lana Derrick, age 19, Ramona Wilson, age 15, Delphine Nicale, age 15, Roxana Tiara, age 15, Alicia Germain, age 15, Nicole Hoare, age 25, and Dina Braham, age 17. Out of those women, only Nicole Hoare is non-native. Other reports have indicated that as many as 34 young women are missing and or murdered on or around Highway 16, most of which are, again, Aboriginal. The relatively low number of cases under investigation is said to be a result of the legal reporting process. I'm not 100% sure what that means, but, again, these are just estimations. It's hard to say who's gone missing where and that kind of thing. But according to the Solicitor General, a detailed review of all files for possible linkages between evidence already obtained in each case is currently underway. More officers may be assigned once the review is finished. The heightened police response comes amid growing fears that a serial killer is to blame for these murders, although police have clearly said they do not have enough proof to make that conclusion yet. The First Nations Leadership Council of BC wrote a letter to the RCMP expressing concerns about the possibility that a serial killer is responsible. In this letter, they called for a, quote, more coordinated approach to these investigations and a pooling of all available resources in a concerted effort. Chief Stuart Phillip of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs pointed to the lessons learned from the tragic serial killings in Vancouver. He said, quote, no one wants to repeat the mistakes of the investigations into the missing and murdered women on the downtown east side of Vancouver. The lessons learned from that tragedy, namely the benefits of a coordinated approach and a swift and dedicated response of law enforcement, could yield positive results for the Highway of Tears investigations. The murder of Alia Sarek Agar has also prompted a call to action by the Lhidle Tene Nation near Prince George. Their traditional territory encompasses a broad stretch of the Highway of Tears, and they have issued a challenge to organizations to work with them to put an end to these horrific murders. In a press release, they stated that the Lhidle Tene Nation are very aware that many of our Aboriginal youth lead dangerous lifestyles, and it is up to us and all Aboriginal communities to close the gap between our broken youth and our communities. We need to ensure that our youth feel treasured by their families, their friends, and their community. Hitchhiking along the highway is apparently a common way of getting around, especially for the ever-restless youth who do not have easy access to private or public transportation. We're talking about pretty rural areas here, so apparently hitchhiking is quite common. Rena Zatorsky, a counselor with the Lhidle Tene Nation in Prince George, welcomed the possible addition of more police officers to the case, but she said such a response has been a long time coming. The band is calling for a community symposium and has pledged money towards the planning of such a symposium. The BC government has announced that it will match the funding and is working with victim services groups and other local agencies to ensure grants are available for related initiatives. There's also a woman from the Wet'suwet'en Nation who is also planning an awareness walk from Prince Rupert to Terrace. So those of you who are going to be in BC, from March 11th to the 17th, 56-year-old Florence Naziel is hoping to walk 20 to 30 kilometers a day in honor of the families of missing women and the Highway of Tears and to, quote, keep awareness and concern in the forefront. So anyone who's interested in, who shares her concern and compassion to join her for any part of the walk, to donate, support or volunteer or offer words of encouragement, contact her at 1-250-847-3751. That's 1-250-847-3751. Or you can email her at go2, that's the letter, the number 2, kalum@telus.net. Again, she's going to be doing an awareness walk for this particular cause. So,
well, it's about time that they start paying attention to that situation because, you know what, it could easily become another Vancouver on the East Side story.
Yeah, and that was the largest serial murder investigation in Canada's history. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised it's a serial killer. It just has all the makings of one.
Yeah, well, speculation.